Hey, Trailblazers, we have some exciting news here at the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We have partnered up with Hilltop Packs, not just because they make amazing ultralight gear, but because they're a small family-run business doing huge things for our hiking and backpacking community. Every food bag, dry sack, fanny pack that you order can be completely customized. Print your trail name, your dog's face, your favorite mountain, or really whatever inspires you. When you shop at Hilltop Packs, you're not only buying gear that you're absolutely going to love, but you're supporting real families, real jobs, and small town craftsmanship. So head over to hilltoppacks.com and use code TTP10 to get 10% off of your order. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. What was that one moment where in your mind you're like, all right, this is actually working and I believe we built something real?
So, you know, again, I've been self-employed my whole life and I don't mind taking risks. And I felt this opportunity. I saw the chatter, people talking about us. And I kept, every time I do an interview with a podcast or YouTube, they'd always say the same thing, that like what we're doing is so disruptive in our industry and we're standing out like, you know, above everybody else with what we're doing. Not trying to say we're the best gear. We have just, again, we're showing pictures of us and our family and the gear's different and we're custom printing. There's so many differentiators that are making us stand out. I was like, if I don't take this chance right now, because again, COVID was going on and they had shut down my photography studio. So I had a lot of free time. I was like, if I'm going to do this, the opportunity is right in front of me. And I am one who's always, my eyes are always wide open looking for opportunities my whole life. And I'm not afraid to jump. So when I start calling people that I knew I wanted to hire, and the first person I hired was an intern that I had years earlier. He was a graphic designer. He was an intern at a photography studio. He was working at a sign company about an hour away from us. And I said, hey, you got to move back to Waynesburg. Come work for me. He goes, well, I'll come down for an interview. And I had not hired anybody. I have the space above my photography studio, a room that's probably only like 60 by 15 or 20. It's not very big at all. And we're sitting in this big empty room. I have nothing in there yet. And I interviewed him and I'm telling him what my vision is. And I talked for an hour and I was so excited and so passionate that I forgot to ask him a single question because I already knew this kid. I mean, I knew him a little bit. So after an hour, I was like, so what do you think? He's like, I would have said yes 5 minutes in. He's like, when can I start? And I was like, oh, all right. I was like, well, just, you know, put your 2 weeks notice in. Just let me know when you want to start. You're the first person I hired. He's like, no, I'll be here Monday. I was like, well, no, do your 2 weeks notice. He's like, no, I'm leaving. I hate my job. I want to come work for you. And so we hired him. And then there was another girl that I had my eyes set on to run her. I knew long-term she was going to be the general manager. And it's Amy who's still there today, who's our general manager now. She was running a doctor's office and I knew she wasn't getting paid for what she was doing. And I've known this girl for a long time because she worked for McMillan Photography part-time. And so I knew her work ethic. She's never let us down. She's always there. She really cares about the people she works with. And I would see her outside of work helping, like returning phone calls back at the office, helping her doctor's office. I'm like, are you like salary? Like, she's like, no, they just needed help and didn't really complain too much. I was like, and I kept thinking back to over all those times, like Amy is going to be the one I'm going to hire. Eventually she'll be the general manager. I'm going to hire her, telling her that. So I called her up and said, hey, I got this new company. You're going to come work for me. You're going to quit your job. I'm thinking I'm going to save her world, right? And she's like, yeah, I'm not leaving. And I was like, oh, I was very sure of myself that she was going to quit. And so I said, oh, you're going to work for me. And she's like, no, that sounds insane. I'm not doing that. So just little by little, every few days, I've sent her a little text message. Hey, sewing machines showed up today. I just ordered like freaking $20,000 of sewing machines or whatever it was, $15,000. I said, all the sewing machines are here. Took a picture of sending them to her. She's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And just for like 3 or 4 weeks, I was like, we're putting the shop together. Here's a picture. This is where you're going to sit. And she's like, I'm not doing that. And I did not look for anyone else. It was just going to be Christian and her and me. did not do any other interviews, nothing. I was so convinced I was going to talk her into this. And it's now it's like this Friday. I remember this. It was like Friday and Monday we're going to get to work. And she still had not committed yet. And I'm like, hey, I'll see you Monday. And that weekend, and I can't remember exactly how it played out, but it was like just a few days before we opened. She's like, I'll take the job. And she's been there ever since. And I don't think she was messing with me. I think she really thought she was never going to take that job. Yeah, but I promised her,
crazy.
I know you're not making much there. I'll match whatever you're making there, which I know isn't much, but I promise you I'll pay you more as soon as I can. And that was the goal the whole time.
During this journey, this Hilltop Packs journey, was there ever, especially like in the early days, was there ever any doubts that this was going to turn into, I don't know, what you wanted or what it is now?
I don't think I ever thought it would be as big as it is. I never really had any doubts on its success. I knew I believed in me. Again, and it sounds so corny, but to be self-employed, you kind of have to have this weird thing about risk, and you have to just enjoy it and embrace it. And you have to go in this mentality that I will figure this out, because any small business owner, most of the ones that are successful, have no idea what they're getting themselves into. And that's the space they thrive in, is the learning phase, the growing phase. And I'm no different than that. I really do like that. So I had no doubts at all that I would figure it out. What I did not think was it would ever be as big as it is. But it was just, it's been such a wild ride watching. Like, look at the numbers and the number of customers we have. And I went to trail days and talked to so many people who knew who we were. And the company is much bigger than us when they were on the radar and they talked to me about it. And it's like, it's mind boggling. I did not expect any of that. I definitely had doubts on how widespread it would be. I thought we'd be big in like the little YouTube community where, you know, these guys are kind of vain and they want pictures of their YouTube channel logo on their food bag. I thought that'd be about it. So not doubts in our success, but definitely I just did not think how big it would get. So,
and I think when I look at this whole podcast and all the questions, and I, you know, we talked a little bit about this in the beginning before we started recording, but you know, this is a question that I was even kind of giving it some thought to really understand the gravity, you know, like, I guess just to get to the question, how do you manage the stress of being a husband, being a father, being a small business owner, you know, with employees, and also like the responsibility that, you know, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I have a team, I don't have any employees. But you know, you have a responsibility to take care of them. And like, how do you handle all that?
Well, I have good people around me. The first thing I would say is if you're going to be self-employed and you're going to build a business, you have to hire the right people. And it's not always just the best employees, but you need the best team, the best support team around you. And I can tell you, just like my photography studio, my wife runs that. So that's taken care of. I work there. I do a lot of the work. I do the marketing, the branding, a lot of the photography, but she runs it. Our coffee shop, it's run by a lady named Deneen. I run the marketing, branding, but she does the day-to-day stuff. I lean on her heavily to do all that. At our coffee roastery, it's Diane. I couldn't even tell you what she does every day, but she kicks ass at it. And we get coffee comes in, coffee goes out. So I know she's doing her job. I don't think about, if there's ever a problem, she always brings it to me after she already found the solution. And I love people like that. And they're all like that. At Hilltop Packs, Amy runs that for me. So Amy is amazing. She keeps production going. She's more of a production manager than a general manager, I guess, but she makes sure everything coming in is going back out, like all the orders going out. Like I work from home today, and I ran in for a little bit towards the end of the day, but I worked home almost the entire day. Did not worry about production at all. I did a lot of website stuff, a lot of social media stuff, but she pretty much ran the shop for me. And that happens all the time. When I was in Arkansas, I didn't worry about any of this kind of stuff. Apex Giant, I have a good guy who runs the business side of that. I have an accountant who does all the accounting for all the businesses. I don't want to worry about numbers. I don't understand that kind of crap. And so I lean on him to do that stuff. He's literally on our like retainer every month. So he handles everything. He's tied in everything. So that's step one, is you have to have a good team around you. But as far as the stress, I think that's something I'm good at. I mean, I think you can probably look at your own life and say, okay, at an early age, my parents said I was good at this and I believed it and I went for it. So at an early age, I had parents who let me do whatever the heck I wanted to within reason. I like building things. I like making things and creating things, and problem solving seemed to be something I always kind of gravitated towards. And you know, maybe the neighbor's VCR broke, which people don't know what that even is anymore. I would go fix it. Maybe someone's stereo isn't working. Maybe the speakers went out. Well, the wire came out the back. I went and fixed that. And oh, Ben's a little problem solver. You know, my dad ran his own business and he was in construction. So he was always solving problems. And the fact that they compared me to kind of what he did, it made me very proud. I was like, I think I'm good at problem solving. Well, that's what business is. And so I thrive in that space mainly because I was told at an early age I was good at it. And I probably was, but I believed it. And I really believed it. And when you get to be a business owner, to be really successful, you have to really believe that you can get yourself into any situation and you can get yourself out of it. Like, I can't tell you how weird that is to like just be completely unaware of what's going to happen. Like, I know where I'm at. I know what the end result needs to be. I have no idea how to do any of this, but I'm excited to learn. And so the risk part of it is, I love that part. Now, the part where you have employees and you know they're relying on you, I feel that. I get emotional about it, but man, it also motivates me. Like, it doesn't scare me though. Like, it's weird to talk about, but like, I love it. I love the pressure. I have failed many times. We could have do a whole episode on businesses that I've had that I've failed. I could tell you businesses that just, I lost a bunch of money and just didn't work out. But if, through every one of them, I've learned something, but it didn't make me like less, it didn't make me more worried about the next time I was going to take a risk. It just, if anything, it kind of strengthened my, my thought process and just how I'm going to plan the next attack. I'm going to do it better next time. It never made me feel like I'm never doing that again. I was like, I can't wait to try again. Just like you're playing baseball. Okay. You strike out a few times. Either you're going to give up baseball or you're going to keep swinging, man. And yeah. I chose to just keep swinging.
For the next question, you may have just actually answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So was there any inspiration, like a who or a what, that inspired you in this space when you were first starting out?
We'll do this in two different ways. So as far as who motivates me and who kind of turned me into the person that I am, as far as like the problem solving thing, I feel like I had that from a very young age, but I didn't realize that was something I could really do. And this is a story that means a lot to me. It's kind of hard to explain to someone else and hopefully you kind of get it. I really enjoy this story. It's about my dad. And so my dad owned a construction company for many years. He has since sold it, moved on. He's actually retired now. But I was probably 20 years old. And this is the moment that really kind of turned me into the person I am. It's like, okay, let's figure this out. We're going to go. This is going to happen. So my dad was running a job site for his company. We were turning an old barn into a winery. We had to raise the barn up like 10 feet or 8 feet, whatever it was, build a foundation underneath of it. It was a big project, put steel all through the barn. And we had cranes in there. We had a bunch of machines and I learned how to run everything. My dad taught me everything, how to run every single machine. I welded on that job. I did electrical on that job. Like, I wanted to learn everything. And my dad let me jump in there and help and work with the other guys and learn. But through all that, towards the end of that job, I was running the job. I was looking at the plans and I was helping build the place and my dad would go do a different job and he was letting me do that and gave me the freedom to make a few mistakes and figure it out. But towards the end of the job, my dad was already on another job site completely and I was there to finish up the job, maybe 2 weeks left to wrap it up. And it was near the end where things weren't really working out. Things weren't matching up. Maybe certain pieces of steel were in the wrong place. We already bolted it down. Maybe we concreted an area that needed a pipe running through it. Now we got to bust the floor up. And like all these things are happening. Like I'm looking at the plans and it doesn't, it's an old barn. So it's not going to match up, but I gave up and I called my dad. I said, Dad, I'm as far as I can take this thing and nothing's working. I'm ready to give up. So I called my dad. So he came the next day and we met there at the job site. And I'm lucky enough. I have somebody I can call. My dad hasn't had a dad since he was 20, 21 years old. His dad passed away when he was very young. So my dad was always the guy that everybody went to. So I'm used to my dad coming in and fixing everybody's problems, just like he was doing mine. So he showed up. He was happy to do it. He pulled the plans out. He looked at the plans, went inside, measured some stuff up, came back out, looked at the plans again. Went back and forth quite a few times, took a bunch of notes, and then looked at me, folded up those plans, opened up the truck door, threw the plans inside. And he said, Son, at some point, you just got to build it. And we went inside and we finished that job in 2 days. And it was like watching him work through those problems and just get the job done. He didn't have anyone else to call. It was him. Everything stopped with him. And I watched this guy not stress about it. I watched him work through each problem, not even considering I'm going to call someone else. He just figured it out. I gave up. I was like, I was never going to do this on my own. So I was like, I want to be that guy. I know he's my dad, but like, I want to be the guy that people call on to fix problems or the guy who just solves problems. And so that's something I learned that day. And the next thing I learned was many years later, about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I guess. I was at dinner with lunch with my uncle, who owns an engineering firm, very successful one. And I was with my dad as well. So me and my dad and my uncle. This is the second lesson I learned, which I learned this a long time ago. And so I was talking to my uncle. I'm always picking his brain about business, and he's very successful, very smart guy. And he's, I love the engineering side of things. I'm not an engineer, but I do like that kind of stuff. So I'm sure I'm annoying him, but he looked at me and goes, what motivates you? He's like, I've watched you your whole life just do so many different versions of different businesses, and none of them seem connected. Like, what motivates you? And I said, I love problem solving. He said, where does that come from? And I told my uncle Terry that story, and my dad's sitting there watching him. And I tell Terry the whole thing. I go through the whole spiel, and I said, and at the end, my dad said, son, at some point you just got to build it. And I was emotional telling the story. Like, I have goosebumps just now talking about it, 'cause I love that story. And I tell my uncle, and I look over at my dad, and my dad goes, I said that? So no. I was like, wait a minute. For 30 years, I never told my dad how much that story meant to me. Like, I just assumed this is my dad just passed down this wisdom to me that day. He's been waiting for that moment his whole life. And here, he doesn't remember even saying it. He's like, I said that? He's like, I don't even think that sounds like something stupid. I don't remember saying anything. It's like, Dad, you changed my life that day. I was like, how have we never talked about that? But in that moment, I realized, you don't realize how much of an impact you make on people. So I'm always very careful. I try to give people a minute of my time if I can. I know it seems like I'm busy, but like, I'm never too busy to stop and talk to somebody. If they need a moment of my time, if they ask for it, I will give it. Now, there's certain people, obviously, they're going to be time suckers. It's going to be a drain on you. You have to know when to walk away. But that's not my point. You got to be willing to give someone a moment of your time, give them some wisdom to walk away with, and hopefully you can help them get through life. You never know how you're going to impact somebody with just a few words. My dad did that to me when I was 20 years old. He didn't even know he did it. Pretty crazy.
That's a wonderful story. I like that one.
It's a long one, but it's very, very important to me.
No, it's absolutely worth it. Absolutely. If you look back, what is one early mistake that you made in this business that taught you a lesson that you still use today?
Hilltop. So luckily, I think I made a lot of my mistakes early on. So I would rather probably answer this from a previous business that I had back in about 1999. I started a computer company. We were hosting websites, and ran that company for about 7 years. And we did really well. We had about 600 websites we were hosting for about 30 different web designers. I had this business model that I was going to reach out to web designers. We were going to run the servers for them. And I did all the nerdy stuff behind the scenes. And anything that I couldn't do, I would subcontract it out to someone else. But I was doing everything else. I was doing the billing. I was doing the marketing. I was doing the customer service. And as the business grew, I still tried to do all those things. I did not try to hire anybody. I should have hired staff. We became a very big company. I shouldn't say very big. For me, it was bigger than I expected it to be. I still tried to do everything by myself because I wanted the money. At some point, it became about money. And then customer service started to fail. And the business eventually, after about 5 years, started to take a downturn, mainly because the customer service was really failing. And I was still too proud and too stubborn to hire anybody. And now we're starting to lose money. And I'm like, now I can't hire anybody. And now I'm in this deep hole spiraling backwards. And it was just one company. I had another company at the time too, but that one had so much potential. And I screwed it up because I didn't hire anybody at the right time. You got to hire early. And then to grow, it's going to cost you financially. You got to take a step back financially, but you got to hire early and put people in the positions to help you. And I learned that lesson from that company because I sold it for just pennies on the dollar. It had so much potential. I screwed up. So when I hired Hilltop, when I started building Hilltop, my idea was hire early, get the right people in there, pay them what I can. Don't worry about making a profit yet. Just this has so much potential. Let's get people in the right positions to where customer service is what it should be. Top notch, and just take care of the customers, take care of the employees, and just do it the right way instead of trying to just suck every dollar out of it. And I'm still barely paying myself just yet, but one day I will. That's the plan. But right now I need to build the company the right way, and I learned that because the company back then, that to this day kills me that I destroyed that company, and it was all my fault because I did not hire anybody to help me. I thought I could do it all, and I couldn't.
No, wow. That's also a great, great lesson.
It's a gut punch.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, especially to the ego, right?
Yep.
So now we start to kind of move into gear design, innovation. How do you approach product design? Do you start with like maybe somebody reports or you run into a problem on the trail, or just kind of maybe more with the creative juices?
It's almost always from a hiking, either a trip that I did or a trip that someone else did, and I had a conversation with them about a problem they're trying to solve. And, you know, and a lot of the stuff we're designing, now there's a lot of things just like dry bags and stuff sacks that we all make. There's a lot of little things that we design trying to solve a problem. And it really does start with the problem. Okay, here's a problem. How can we make it simple to solve? I don't want to make a complicated product to solve a simple problem. I want a simple product to solve a simple problem. And so, you know, again, when you go simple, it's going to be lighter and less failure points. So everything we do is extremely simple. It's not, we're not redesigning anything. We're not going to space. We're not redesigning something crazy that's multiple parts intertwined with each other. It's all very simple construction. Strip it down so it's lightweight and less failure points. So solve the problem first. How can we make it simple?
I don't know, to the listeners, you definitely can't see, but when you were just now saying that, I started to get a giggle because you have a new trowel that cuts roots.
Yep.
Seen lots of videos, and I just started imagining, you know, somebody coming up to you and saying, Ben, I was digging a cat hole and, you know, this root got in the way and I had to go really bad and I need you to.
Yeah. Here's how that came out. So we have our dirt diggler. All right. So the first trowel we designed was to solve a problem because people didn't like the sharp edges of all these trowels that are out there. They want something.
Exactly.
It still digs a hole, but doesn't have sharp edges. You can throw it anywhere in your pack. You don't worry about nothing. So that's the first problem we solved. Okay. That's great. I love that trowel. I've been using it for a couple of years. Still love it to this day. But then people are like, well, still have those little roots. Sometimes you're digging and you hit one. You're like, ah, that root's kind of stopping you from digging. And I'm like, but I've used those other trowels. They're worthless. Like the little saw edges. Like I'm not a mini lumberjack. I'm not like going to saw out the roots when I got to go. I'm not doing this. It's going to make me go to the bathroom with my pants. Like this is like, there's gotta be a better way. And I never solved it. I never found a better way to get rid of a root. I just thought it's just impossible. If you want that, get the sawtooth ones that are out there. Well, I was brainstorming with my buddy Travis, who is our business partner at Apex Giant. And he's not a hiker at all. Like I took him on one hiking trip and I thought he was going to kill me. Like it just, it did not go well at all. I took him to the tallest point in Pennsylvania, which is some hiking trails there. And we hiked out there and I'm thinking he's going to love the view. He's going to love this. He's going to fall in love with backpacking. We're 2 years deep into Apex Giant at this point. It's the first trip he's done with me. And I purely hired him or partnered up with him just for the business side of it. And anyway, he hated it. So we still brainstorm a lot. So hearing him throw out ideas to me, sometimes it's funny because he's not a hiker. He has no idea what he's saying. And he'll say like, he'll start designing something. I was like, dude, that's going to weigh 10 pounds. We can't use that. It's not it. So we're talking about a new trowel. And I'm like, I want to design a new trowel, but I don't know how to do it. It's gotta be something different. He's like, what are some of the problems? I'm like, well, you do get these little mini roots. And even with our trowel, you have to kind of like hit it hard and kind of punch through it. And it works, but it's like, that's a lot of effort to push. And he's like, well, why don't you just rip it out? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, just put a little hook on the trowel and just rip it. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, just put a little hook and just rip it. I was like, where did that come from? It's like, no, first of all, I don't think there's any trowels out there that do that. I was like, well, let me sit in front of the computer. So I sat down right in front of him, did a 3D model, designed it. And I was like, I think this will work. We sent off a prototype to our machine shop. They cut one out, had it back in like 6-7 days, and took it out with Rob Pelton. He was here, just happened to be in town from, he has his own YouTube channel. He also works for Leave No Trace. He was in town. We took it out and the first prototype was kind of digging in her hand a little bit. The way I designed the handle wasn't quite right, but the hook part worked beautifully. Like I could not believe it worked. I watched him do it. We made a video. We actually were filming ourselves and Rob goes, did you see that? I was like, hey, he goes, that was so easy. I was like, I can't believe it worked. He's like, yeah, I didn't think that would actually do anything. He's like, that's amazing. So he kept digging, did another root. Then he did another one and just kept cutting it. I was like, so then we redesigned the handle. Now we have the final version. And it's the only trowel that I know of that actually rips the root, which takes less energy to pull it than to do this. You know, yeah. Cutting through these little roots, that again, that's too much energy for me. I've always just moved over. But now, man, you just cut and rip and cut and rip. And it works amazing. So we just released it. I need to make some videos for it. But yeah, that's how that came about. From a guy who's not a hiker. He just threw a weird idea out there. He's always throwing out crazy ideas. 99% of them, not good. So,
hey, it only takes one, right?
It only takes one. That's it.
Kind of talking about materials that you work with, what is your favorite and what is your most frustrating?
I really like this new D50T fabric we use for several reasons. It's easy to sew. It's easy to manage. It's easy to print on. It's easy to get right now. The most frustrating part is all the Dyneema. Dyneema, not so much because of production, it's because we can't get as much as we want in the colors that we want. And it's frustrating because we'll build a whole web page, get the product up there. Okay, it's going to be green stuff sacks. And then all of a sudden we can't get green for 9 months. Like, okay, now I'm going to change the colors, redo the pictures. And okay, so now we're going to make dry bags out of the clear 1.0 fabric. Okay, great. Go. Okay, 2 months in, we can't get clear 1.0. We have to use gray. Like, okay, I got to change product pictures again. So it's just so frustrating. The Dyneema is kind of like that. And we could go straight to DSM, which is like the parent company. I think that's what they're called. And put an order right from them and get exactly what we want. But you got to spend like $40,000 up front. And then you don't get it for like 6 months. And I'm not going to tap that much capital waiting for like 6 months. And you don't even know what color you're going to get anyway. So we go through a few different distributors for the Dyneema. Now everything else, EcoPack, Ultra, the D50T, we go straight to the manufacturer. We can get those no problem. It's just Dyneema. I love it. Two problems with it. One, hard to get. Two, it does shrink a little bit over time. And I don't like the shrinkage part of it either. People don't realize that your food bag on a through hike, a large food bag is going to lose a couple inches in height. And no man wants to lose a couple inches. That's just not something we want now. You want to hold on to that length as long as you can.
That's right. You know, and it's funny when I was thinking about this question about the material, because, you know, Joe with Trekker Joe's, we'll go hiking. And man, you bring up material and he starts, it's like, I guess when people bring up hiking and backpacking to me, like now I know how they feel. He, like his knowledge on materials and like some of the words you were using, I was just like, oh, that's like way over my head.
There's definitely people that are really nerd out on the different materials, and we have all the data sheets, and I'm not a detail guy. I'm definitely, okay, does this work? Let's test it. Does it work? Does it solve a problem? That's all I can really care about. Like, of course you have to have the right fabric. The data has to make sense, but I'm not digging into the nitty gritty more than I need to. So there's guys that definitely I talk to, and I'm like, guys, I don't even know what you're talking about. I live in this space. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, that's way over my head. And like, well, you have the data. Okay, I was in Trail Days. Perfect example. I was in Trail Days, and some guy was talking about the D50T. He actually owned a small company, and we were using it. He says, yeah, it's really cool stuff. We're starting to use it too. And he starts talking about all the data. I was like, man, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, it's on your page. It's your data. It's your data sheet. I was like, oh yeah, that. He's like, it's your data sheet. You designed it. I was like, I did that to help you guys because I wanted other companies to use it. So I designed this data sheet along with Challenge Sailcloth to put out there to other people so they could use it and hopefully kind of basically awareness to consumer of, okay, we're all going to use this new fabric now. At least some of us are. Because if it's just us, that education process gets expensive. If other small companies start using it as well, that helps out. But it was just funny. He was talking about the data sheet on my website. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah. One time I was talking to Joe and I was actually just left a Dairy Queen and I just left before I ordered because I just got back from a hike. And, you know, in Houston, it's, you know, right now we're almost 100 degree temperatures. Man. And, you know, when you pull out your wallet and you've been hiking, you have all the ass sweat on your money, on your credit cards or back sweat, whatever it is. And so I was telling him like, yeah, I was embarrassed. Like my money's wet, my debit card's wet. And he's like, oh, you should use the flux capacitor material and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh. So yeah, he ended up having some material that worked. So I have no more problems.
No more butt sweat on your cash. There you go.
That's right. Is there a piece of gear in the Hilltop Packs lineup that took you the longest to get just right?
Oh yeah. Like our Raven backpack. I've changed and tweaked that thing so many times. Like I have the original, I have the last prototype that I designed before we released the Raven, which was like late 2019, early 2020. And I have every backpack I've made before that, all the way back to 2016, I think. I have another hanging at Hilltop. It's a big, long wall. It's about 15 backpacks across the wall, showing the whole history of our company. And but I've changed and tweaked that Raven so many times because I learned a lot. The first one still functions. We still take it out once. My brother actually uses it. Still holds up great. But there's so many things about that I, you know, the way we did our pockets before, the way the adjuster worked, it wore through the Dyneema a little bit too soon. So we do this pockets differently. Shoulder straps are close to the same thing, but the grosgrain, now we use like a mil spec grosgrain across the front of the thing. So it just holds up a lot better. The early versions would wear out after so much time. Now they last forever. So little things like that, just that's the benefit of having a small company like us and Trekker Joe's. You're just constantly tweaking, constantly changing. And we're all learning from each other, whether they want to admit it or not. We're all checking out each other's pages and zooming in on pictures. Like, how did they do that one thing there? Like, hey, I have no problem admitting I did that. We're all stealing from each other.
Absolutely.
When it comes to backpacks, there's not a whole lot of innovation out there outside of just the way it looks. They all function kind of the same. It straps on your back. There's a few companies doing something a little bit different. But that's difficult. If you're talking about traditional backpack, there's only so much you can really do. But I have tweaked and changed the components and the fabrics over time to make it what it is today.
So I don't know if this is secret or not, but can you give some insight and kind of walk us through the process of turning an idea into a finished shippable product?
Sure. It usually starts with... a lot of times it's an email from a customer like, hey, I have this problem. How do I fix it? Or I have this problem and I'm using your whatever bag. It's not big enough or it's not small enough. Or I think it would be better if you did it this way. Perfect example. This morning I was talking to a guy about our zipper pouches. He's like, I love the zipper pouches. I buy a bunch of them. I use them for different things. I wish you had ones a little bit taller because this is what I do with it. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. And so having a taller zipper, and that's how that kind of stuff, it's not a drastic, you know, years long production and R&D process. Usually it's just a problem that a guy has. I'm like, yeah, I bet other people would probably benefit from that change as well. So we're going to add a taller size to our zipper pouches here pretty soon to solve that guy's problem. And I'm sure it's going to solve some other people's problems as well. I would like to take probably a larger toiletry kit. So if I'm going to use a zipper pouch for a toiletry kit, I need to be a little bit taller anyway. That's probably a good idea. Usually I just use a bigger dry bag, but I think I would go to a bigger zipper pouch if I had that. So usually starts with a customer conversation and then we get to work and then I will go and I'll sew something up. I'll prototype it myself. No one else really does that. And then I'll play around with it a little bit and just play with the size. If it's something sewn, you don't really have to, if you already use the fabrics and you've already done that design, so you don't have to really test it or anything like that. But if it's like a metal product, like the trowel, we'll design it, test it, design it again, redesign it, remake it, test it. It starts with a conversation, usually with another hiker or my own experience out on the trail. And okay, how do we make this easier, simpler, lighter, better? And then by the time it's done, take pictures, put on the website and send an email. Here we go. That's it. But again, small companies like us, myself, Trekker Joe's, we can adapt and change. Even like big companies like Z-Packs, like they're adapting as they go. They may not always announce it, but they're going to keep tweaking that backpack every year, every 6 months, or what as needed. You may not even know it. They're not making a big announcement. This is the version 19.5. They're not doing that. They're just going to keep going. So, I mean, sometimes they do that, but you know what I mean? They're not, that doesn't have to be a big release or a big moment or a big announcement that, hey, we changed the pocket a little bit. So it's just constantly changing.
What about the field testing that you do for your products? And I have kind of a funny story. Like I was given some gear to test. It was just like a little sleeve and I'm not hiking and backpacking every day. And so, you know, I'm just thinking in my mind, okay, like, you know, I have 3 or 4 or 5 trips a year. Usually it's to the quads, or I'm usually on the Lone Star hiking trail every Sunday, hiking sections of it. Am I going to really be able to give it the proper field testing and report back? So, you know, I'm just, while I'm working, I'm just opening it up the snap like 400 times a day. I'm sitting on it, stepping on it, biting it. Like I tried to.
Good example. So we first switched to the D50T fabric. We wanted to test it out to see if it was really going to hold up. And we had no idea. So we made a stuff sack out of it. And everybody that's in the shop that day, I made them all open and close it. I think 50 or maybe 100 times each. I forget at this point. And so they open and close it. And it passed on to everybody. I was like, okay. And then we scrunch up into a ball, do that 100 times. And everybody just did that all day long. And then I took it home and I used it in my computer bag, which is a backpack that I made. And I put my cords into it. So, okay, I'm going to use this thing. And I used it for weeks. And I just saw like, it actually got softer. It got quieter, but the structure was awesome. It was perfect. There was no wear and tear. There was nothing that looked like it was flaking off. It didn't, wasn't getting fuzzy, the fabric or anything. There's no delamination. I was like, I think we got something here. And clearly used it way more than anybody had ever used it on a trail at this point. Because again, everyone in staff used it. I'm using it every day for cords and sharp objects are going in there. A mouse goes in there and I use it 2 or 3 times a day between going to my coffee shop and at the hilltop and at home. And so, yeah, sometimes we test it, like you said, just in real world situations where it's not backpacking, but we can use it you know, another perfect example is I designed a backpack to use as a laptop bag, and I was just going to use it every day for a while before I sold it, and it ended up being terrible. It didn't work out, so I got to redesign it, and it had to do with how far the laptop goes down into the bottom of the bag. I had it raised up about 3 inches, and I had a cushion underneath, and I was going to put a pocket in the bottom. I don't even know what I was thinking. I was just trying to leave some space down there. I was going to do something like access from the side, like a zipper or something. What I found was the weight of the laptop was way more than I expected. It basically it crushed all the fabric down. So that little 2 or 3 inch window or space at the bottom of the backpack, it just pushed it down, and it didn't ride right. Now I have this scrunchy part of the backpack that didn't work out. So, but you know, if I had to wait until I got on the trail for something like that, which you're not going to carry a laptop on a trail, but yeah, we test stuff in everyday use, of course, just to try it out.
Yeah. Like I'm walking around the house chewing on it, and my wife's like, what the hell are you doing? Like, I'm just trying to put it through its paces.
We're digging holes in the yard out next to us. There's an insurance company right next to us, and we're digging in front of their insurance company. Didn't even ask for permission. We're just digging a hole in their yard. And it's kind of our yard a little bit, but we're out there digging. And then I went and got Amy. And then she dug a hole, and then Christian dug a hole. We filled it all back in. We're filming and taking pictures, and they had to be looking out the window like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah. That's important stuff.
That's important stuff. Yeah.
So this is a very interesting question, in my opinion. So what is your opinion on the ultralight versus comfort debate in the backpacking world?
So I'm definitely a firm believer in, at least for me, I wanted to go as light as I humanly could. Like, I got my weight down very, very low. I was so low, but my goal wasn't to be like an ultralight hiker. I wanted to go as light as I can so I could add in some things I wanted to take, like my camera gear. Early on, it was about taking my camera gear. Like I said, I bought all the Z-Pack stuff early on. I had all the dry bags, stuff sacks, and the backpacks. And then I started making my own stuff, but it was still on the same lines. And I got my weight down to what was like as light as humanly possible. But it was so I could take my camera gear, take 6 pounds of camera gear with me. And even to this day, like I really don't know what my weight is. I'm usually trail weights, summertime, 22, 24 pounds total trail weight on the trail. That's about where I'm at. And that's taking a chair. That's taking a small camera. Maybe just a GoPro, maybe. So you got to get your weight down to be comfortable so you can enjoy yourself. Maybe take the things that you want to take. So yes, get your weight down, but I'm not going to go out there with absolutely nothing else but my backpacking gear. Usually is I have a camera of some type with me. Does that make sense?
The way I think about it, like, you know, being a gear company and trying to maybe even at times be ahead of the game. How do you keep up with the evolving needs of hikers and backpackers, or, you know, even like the weekend warrior that's maybe not so much dedicated to grams and weight and, you know, this and that, just someone that likes to kind of get outdoors.
Yeah. The best way to keep up is just talk to them. We love visitors that come to our shop, and I read the comments in our videos. I read the comments on our TikTok stuff and Instagram. And I conversate back with them, emails. Like, I am involved in our ticket system. So it's, you know, it's Jen, Christian, and Brandon and myself. We're all in the email system. Anything to do with related to gear questions, they send it straight to me. And like, if you ask a question about a piece of gear, maybe a potential piece of gear, it all comes to me. And that, just those conversations, having that communication with them, keeps me on top of things. I'm not so focused on what other companies are doing. I mean, you have to kind of watch to stay in business, yeah, and to do the marketing and whatever, but if I'm not paying attention to what's most important, which is the customer, that's when you kind of lose sight. You start competing with everybody, then it gets kind of weird. But I want to leave those lines of communication open with the customer. They feel appreciated, they feel seen, and it gives me a lot of ideas and motivation to create new products.
You know, and it's funny because I don't know how long ago, but I messaged you guys. And I think it was even before I started podcasting. So I've been doing it about a year and a half, and like, I heard from you. Like, I was like, whoa, he's the owner. Like, what? You would never get that at REI or, you know, some of these other.
It does get difficult, but it's like we have a pretty good system of filtering out who gets which emails. And usually the first point of contact is either Jen or Christian. They know how to answer a lot of questions. If it's a printing question, Christian answers it. The shipping issue or order issue, Jen handles it. If it's a wholesale or business to business, Brandon gets it. If it's a product idea, a product question or anything like that, it does still come to me. And when Tim gets here, he may pick up on some of that and do some of those duties, but I enjoy it. That's useful for me because again, I can use that information to design new products. So I think I'm always going to be involved in that no matter how big we get. Is, you know, it's still backpacking. We're just like, we're going to be a big, massive, you know, $100 million company, a $1 billion. It's not going to be that. So I think I'll always have a space carved out where I can answer emails myself.
No, and I think as a consumer of your content and your products, that means a lot.
I do get kind of surprised sometimes. People reply back like, are you really the owner? Are you really like, yeah. They're shocked that I responded. Like, we're probably bigger than you realize, but we're probably not as big as some people think we are. Does that make sense? Like, it is still just us. Like, we know it's just us. I know the volume we're doing. I know we're turned into a pretty good sized company, but it is still just us. And we kind of take that for granted sometimes. And the shock of people when they, it happens quite often, and people are surprised that I'm answering emails. But again, it helps me. It does help and motivate new products. So
take us behind the scenes. What does a typical day look like for you at the Hilltop PAX headquarter?
You know, I always thought this would be a question on every podcast that no one's ever asked me like that. Like, what's a typical day look like? So if you would ask Amy what my days look like, or anyone else around me, it probably looks pretty chaotic and pretty nuts. But I do have a very loose plan, and I have a little priority list I need to do on my phone. I try to get if I can at least get two or three of those things done, I'm happy. I get up in the morning, I make my coffee, I sit down, and I look for any kind of emails that have to do with like business to business stuff or anything internally we have to deal with. I'll try to jump on that first. Maybe Brandon has questions about our wholesale program or whatever. I deal with that first. And then if there are any kind of flagged emails from customers that really need like addressed like now, maybe Jen can't handle it, I'll do that. But then I also carve out some time to watch some YouTube videos or TikTok videos or Reddit or Instagram. Reddit's definitely something I check every single day. Instagram's something I check every day. YouTube, I try to check the shorts in the morning, just like watch a quick little video. And I try to have like 5 to 10 of each platform. I just want to see what's going on. I want to comment if appropriate, because I don't always comment sometimes. I just want to see what's happening. And I feel like that keeps me on my toes. So I get that out of the way. And usually now it's about 8:30 at this point. I'll go to our coffee shop. I'll check in there, just make sure everything's going okay. And I'll get a cup of coffee there. It's my second cup of coffee. And then sometimes I have like a meeting or two there. It just kind of depends. And usually at Hilltop by 10 o'clock. And then that's when I start at Hilltop. And then throughout the day, we're prototyping. I'm jumping and helping. Fixing machines a lot lately. The machines are, you know, if machine maintenance is a big deal. We're changing the thread, and that's been kind of a chore, getting all the machines converted over to the new thread. I'll do that throughout the day. Most of the staff is done by 4 o'clock. I'm usually still there. I probably stay till about 6 or 7 at night working on different things. Usually after hours, I'll do more emails. And that's about 7 o'clock. I go home and sit back in front of the computer, reply to more emails. That's business to business or wholesale stuff or whatever. Work. I love working, and it's pretty much all day. And here's the key to working a lot. I have a wife, which we haven't talked about a whole lot yet. I have a wife who has no problem telling me, "Hey, dumbass, you're working too much. Go outside and play basketball with your kid." My son's 9 years old, loves playing basketball. And I'm so in tune in the zone with my emails or social media posts, whatever I'm doing. And I enjoy it. It's not like it's work. I really do like what I do. But sometimes I forget my family. I forget my friends. And like, but to me, I'm not saying my family doesn't make me happy. That's not what I mean. But I get so zoned in. ADHD kicks in. I know it's a very common thing, but I think I'm probably off the charts. But I rely on my wife to say, "Hey, dumbass, go outside, play with your kid. You haven't played for a few days." And I trust her when she does that. She doesn't abuse that power. And I trust her when she says it. She makes me go on vacations a couple times a year because I would rather just keep working. But she's like, "Nope, we're going with the kids. We went to DC this year. We've been to Erie this year and with the kids." And like, so she makes sure I get out there, and I always enjoy myself. I do, but she almost has to tell me when I need to go. Backpacking trips, hiking trips. Sometimes she's like, "Hey, you're about due for a backpacking trip. You know, you need it. Get out there." She's really, I mean, I'm telling you that she's what I need for my type of personality. And I've almost gotten to the point where I have gone to the point where I rely on this. I rely on her to be like that. 100%, because I don't do it for myself. And I probably would get to a point where I would burn out if I didn't have her in my corner to do that. So
absolutely.
I'm not sure if I answered the question, but I lean on her heavily to keep me on track throughout the day to make sure I'm not completely blowing everything up and screwing everything up. But my typical day is monitored and controlled by her for the most part, but it's a long day, but I enjoy it. I like it.
Nice. And so this kind of leads into the next question. saying what you just said, when it's time to focus on other things, are you able, or and even at night, you know, as you're going to bed, are you able to turn your brain off?
Up until 2 years ago, no. When I was younger, I would barely sleep. I worked and I would wake up all night long. When I was younger, I would take notes on a pad. When smartphones came out, since what, 2010 or later, I started taking notes on my phone. I could do that. I could be up 10 times a night taking notes and get up in the morning, go to work and hit the ground running, and I would crush it. And I did that for years. And then as of about 2 or 3 years ago, I really started to, my body couldn't take the no sleep thing anymore. It really started messing me up a little bit. And I had no idea I had ADHD. My brother always said it as a joke, didn't even know what it meant.
No.
And then Travis, my business partner at Apex Giant, he's a licensed therapist, is literally what he does. I looked terrible this one day, and everybody at the office was like, "You look like crap." And my brother's like, "What's wrong?" I said, "I'm not sleeping." He goes, "It's that ADHD." I was like, and I thought I took it as a joke. Didn't think it was a real thing. I thought that was a kid's thing. Had no idea. Travis goes to meet me later that day for Apex Giant meeting, and he's like, "Buddy, you don't look good at all." He says, "What's wrong?" I said, "Brandon thinks I have ADHD." And he's like, "You 100% have that." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, you definitely have that. You should go talk to somebody." I was like, "Dude, that's what you do." I was like, "I've known you for 15 years. Why didn't you ever tell me that?" He's like, "Because you're my friend. If I diagnose all my friends, I'll have no friends." He's like, I was like, "Wait a minute." I was like, "You see me struggle. You didn't want to step in and say something." He's like, "It's just not something we do." I was like, "All right, who do I go talk to?" And I apologize, this is a longer story. But this is how I this is actually a turning point in my life as well. So through my wife and some people we know, I'd start talking to this therapist, and then she was like, "Listen, you're off the charts. She tested me for ADHD. She's like, "Definitely have it. You got it." Okay. But she also said, "It's very common, but you're kind of off the charts." She's like, "I'm going to recommend you to go to someone else and talk to them who kind of specializes in it." It's like, okay. So I talked to that person for, I think, 2 or 3 sessions, and they're like, "Listen, you definitely have it. I'm actually going to recommend you to somebody else." So now I'm going to like my fourth person at this point in like 2 months' time. Travis bailed on me. The first therapist bailed on me. The third one, she's like, "Hey, I got something better." And I was ready to just give up on the whole therapy thing. I was like, "This ain't working out." And so the last person wasn't near where I was from. So I was going to have to do like the telehealth thing, like over the computer, which actually was going to work out pretty good. So I could just step away from work, go outside, set my car, get my phone out and hold it and just talk to the therapist. So this is my first, and I'm like, again, feeling defeated. This is not going to go well. And this lady, she's probably like in her late 60s. And I read a little bit about her, but wasn't a whole lot of information about her. Didn't know anything about her. And as soon as the screen comes on, I'm holding my phone, and all she goes, "Jesus Christ, you're not fucking driving, are you?" I went, "This is the lady for me right here." I was like, you're exactly what I need. I said, "No, I'm sitting in my car outside my business." She's like, "God damn." She's like, "You scared the crap out of me." She's like, "I thought you were driving." And she's like, "Okay, let's get to work." And then every time I would like be down on myself and basically I was beating myself up a lot about like the kind of person I was and the way I work and how I feel like I'm failing everybody because I'm tired and I'm not functioning right. And the last year has not been good for me personally and health wise. And like, I need to be there for my employees and my family. And I'm failing everybody. And she really got me back on track. And one of the things was sleeping. And she's like, you know, she helped me get my sleep back on track and just little tools that I needed throughout the day to kind of get my life back. One of them was time management. Not that I'm always early. I'm never late for anything, but like little timers around the shop. I have like little timers on every piece of equipment. So if I'm going to go over and work on this, I'm only going to do it for 5 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever that project needs. I have alerts on my phone, timers on my phone that I use for many different projects throughout the day. I'm only going to work on this, like the book. I'm only going to work on that for 1 hour. Got to move on to the next thing because I'll get sucked into that book all day and it'll screw me all up. By doing that, I got more stuff done. And when it was time to go to bed, I felt satisfied. And that was the biggest thing for me because the reason I was staying up is I'll go to bed and I'm like, "Oh, I forgot this one thing today. Got to write it down." Okay, go back to sleep. "Oh, I forgot something else." I write it down.
Yeah.
Once I started actually accomplishing more throughout the day and more of a structured environment, I didn't need to do that. And I have not gotten up in the middle of the night and taken a note in 2 years. And I did that my entire life. So that was a much longer answer to your question than you were expecting. But go to therapy. That's my answer. Just go to
You absolutely nailed it. And yeah, I mean, this is a little away from Hilltop Packs, but
yeah,
for everybody listening, like how many people know they have issues in anything and don't do anything about it.
And it's okay. Like ADHD is so common. The more you fight it, the more you fight it, the more you push away from it, thinking the more damage you're doing. Like it, like the first thing she said was like, I mean, I feel different. I've always felt different. She's like, you are different. You're fucking weird as shit. Like she's telling me this to my face. She's like, but that's okay. Like, she's like, that's your superpower. She's like, what are you talking about? Like you are different. Use that. How do you think you've built 4 or 5 businesses at one time? It's because you have ADHD. It's okay. Yep. She's like, you are weird. You are different. That's okay. Embrace it. And I have been able to walk in, and this is, we're getting way off topic now, but like I walk into rooms now, my chin's a little higher. I feel like I belong. You know, I'm in a bunch of different boards in our community. I'm on the chamber board. I've been the president of our local tourism office. I'm on our economic development board. I'm involved with a bunch of different businesses. And like, and I still would always walk in thinking, I don't belong here. Like, this is not like, I'm a fraud. These people, how are they thinking that I know what I'm talking about? And ever since, because I felt different, I felt weird. And I've had so much more confidence from that moment on. Hilltop Pax has grown more because of that. At least I feel it has. I've grown more as a person. I feel like I've grown more efficiently. I've grown closer to my family. I'm more useful to my friends. All that because someone convinced me to go to therapy. And it was the best damn thing I ever did. I feel good. Yeah, go ahead. It's crazy.
No, I mean, it's, and we have to love ourselves. And we have to understand that we are worth the effort.
Yeah, 100%.
Like you said, everybody in our lives will benefit from it.
100%. You do belong in that room you're in. Okay. And it's about time you start acting like it. I know you may be missing some of the tools you need to get to that point where you feel that way, but you certainly belong in that room. And that's what she kept telling me. She's like, you do belong in that room. She's like, why do you keep saying it? I was like, I don't know. She's like, well, you do walk in there. Like you freaking own the place. I mean, well, like you've earned it, but not really. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and I have to give myself a little pep talk before these podcast episodes, because I like, you know, even with this one, just for example, Hilltop Pax, like this wonderful company, why do they want to come on my little old podcast? And, you know, and you start getting nervous and I have to.
Full disclosure. It's the other way around. Like I feel nervous about being on your show. Like this guy has a podcast. Why is he going to talk to me? Like, I hope I can be entertaining enough. This guy wants to talk to me. Like it's so crazy how you and I both have the same conversation in our heads. We're both coming from the same place, but that's the exciting and nervous, rewarding part when you get through. You're like, that was freaking awesome. Like, I really enjoy myself, just so you know that. You can cut that part out if you need to, but I am really enjoying this, and that's why I'm doing it. You know, I've listened to a few of your podcasts, sound entertaining, sound like, you know, you're really enjoying yourself and you're doing it for the right reasons. Those are the podcasts I want to do. So I felt lucky and honored that you wanted to have me on here. Cause again, we're still just this, to me, small little company that grew out of my basement, and it's only been 5 years. So I still think small. I don't think about the impact we've made across the community yet, but it's starting to sink in a little bit. So I appreciate your kind words, but I promise you, I was just as nervous, if not more.
That's hilarious. All right. I really enjoyed that part. And, I think our listeners will definitely, hopefully, you know, get a benefit out of it. So that was awesome. So, all right. So this is a really important question to me, because we've talked about this before the podcast, during the podcast. I love you guys because you're family. I love you guys because you're real people. You're not, there's no fake to it. This is it. This is what we see. To keep that, how do you handle the scalability while still staying true to what you've created? And scalability, I mean, like, you know, I think our society, to me, is pretty disgusting in a lot of ways. And one of the ways, I don't know if it's through social media or if it's just, I don't know what it's from, but like, we have to have everything now.
Yeah. So yeah, the whole consumerism thing is something it's a problem. It's a real problem. And that's why from the very beginning, we have never told anybody that you need our gear, because I know you don't need it. You really don't need our stuff to get out there. I want you to want it, and that keeps us in business. And we're doing it for the right reasons. We hired the good people, and we're going to make good gear for you. But there is a problem with people buying too much stuff and just feeling like they need stuff. Like, okay, I saw it in a video, I need to have that. I saw it in a, someone else was carrying it, I need to have it and be like them. That is a real problem. That's why you hardly ever see any call to actions in any of our photos and any of our videos and any of our posts, because I don't want someone to be tricked into buying something that they don't need. Now, I want us to, there's a big conflict there, because I have a business to run. I have a business that needs to generate sales. I need to keep people employed. I need to be able to make payroll. So I want to do it for the right reasons. I want to scale for the right reasons, and I want customers to buy for the right reasons. And if we can all do that together, then it works. And so even though it seems like we've scaled fast, and we did in a lot of ways, it was still somewhat controlled growth, because there's times we turn products off on the website that we're selling too much, we'll slow down. And I'll just shut it off for a week or two. And backpacks are a great example. We'll turn that off once in a while when we're just way too far out. And instead of hiring a bunch of new people just to make more backpacks, just to keep feeding the beast and just keep going, you know, yes, I want to grow, but only because I want to hire more people and not just to keep chasing a dollar. So how do you scale and stay true? I think, like I said earlier, we've had the same message from the very beginning. You don't need our stuff. You don't need it. You really don't. I want you to want it, and I want you to want it for the right reasons. And then we can grow the company together. That's kind of that's how we've been able to scale and scale. I don't know how to end that conversation, but that's how we've done it. And it's not been easy by any means. Scaling up actually is fairly easy. It's scaling back down when things slow down a little bit. That's where you kind of run into some problems. We're making it work, but that's our message. And that's our, I don't know what the words are you're looking for, but that's how we feel about our company. And from day one, we haven't stopped that mantra that we want you to want it.
Yeah. Awesome. So in the 5 years that you guys been in business, has there ever been any opportunities that you've turned down just because they didn't align with your vision?
Sure. Not in like a real negative way, but we knew we weren't ready for certain things. Like garage grown gear from almost day one was beating down our door. And they wanted us to sell our product on our website. And Lloyd is a great guy, and it's a great company, and they've helped us out in so many tremendous ways over the years. But for the first couple of years, I kept telling them no. I said, I feel like if I do this with you, I'm going to either screw up our relationship and not be able to fulfill those orders, or I'm going to screw up our current customers and not fulfill those orders. I can't grow that fast yet. Like, we're not in a position to take advantage. It would have been more money. It would have been a lot more money. And he's willing to spend a lot to get us going. And I was like, Lloyd, I know we're not ready for that. So I had to turn it down for 2 years. We turned it down. And then when I got to a point where I felt like we were kind of evening things out a little bit, we had good production, good machines, good people. And now we have the capacity to kind of grow, and I feel comfortable about it. That wouldn't affect our current customers. Called Lloyd up and said, it's go time. And we went, but that was 2 years of waiting for the right time to do that, instead of just jumping on a dollar, just for the dollar. I mean, and that was a smart move for us, and it really worked out well.
Yeah, I like that. So if you had to start over today with Hilltop Packs 2, would you do anything differently?
Nope. I never really look at things like that either. I'm definitely an experienced kind of guy. Like, I like experiences, and doing it over again, I don't need it to be perfect. So you're not going to learn anything if it's perfect. And think about that. I mean, no matter what you're doing, you're going to learn through all your failures. And if you take all the failures out, what's the fun? Think about all your backpacking trips you do. The most important ones to you, the ones you talk about, are the hardest ones you've done. You're not talking about the boring ones where you figured everything out and it was just a nice, easy stroll to the top. No, it's the hard freaking trips. Those are the ones you talk about. So I really wouldn't change anything. Of course, I've made bad decisions and maybe things I feel bad about or feel, you know, that didn't work out. Maybe someone's job was affected by my bad mistake and I laid somebody off. I feel awful about it, but I'm going to learn from it and just do better next time. So I've never been one to kind of look back, mostly because my memory's getting bad and I don't know how to do that. I forget about a lot of stuff. But yeah, I really like the journey, man. I like it when it's hard. I like it when it gets tough, and that's what makes it fun.
If you kind of look in the space that you operate in, you know, a smaller outdoor company, what do you think is your biggest challenges that you face?
Well, I mean, obviously we rely on social media heavily. So staying on top of all the different platforms that are out there, the ever-changing platforms, and knowing they're just going to change again. And then you got AI and like all this stuff that's happening. Like, so where do I advertise? Where do I post? What kind of content am I creating? It's constantly changing. I enjoy that, that challenge. But that is probably the hardest part. I mean, making the gear is not hard. Getting the word out, it's through social media is probably the hardest part, like how much it's changing. But we have a nice customer base now. And that, you know, once there's going to be a certain point where you reach so many customers where they start doing the spreading the word for you. And that certainly helps dramatically. But we still advertise, we still post. And yeah, that challenge of social media, it's only going to change faster. It's only going to change more crazy. And what each platform wants from you is going to be, is constantly going to be changing. It's getting shorter and it's getting more catchy and whatever, flashy to get. And that, you know, our style of social media is just like, here's the thing, here's how we use it, here's how we make it, here's how it's customized. We're having to make those videos shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter while still staying true to what we want to do.
Yeah, I remember like when TikTok was going to be banned, and I jumped on, was it Red Note? And then I jumped back, and it's not, I mean, it's like you said, it's always and always changing.
But I put myself in a position where that's my job at the company, is to do all the advertising, all the social media stuff, every single post we make, that's me making it. And that allows me to kind of adapt and just kind of jump around. You know, maybe one day we'll have a marketing team, bringing Tim here from the Grand Canyon, who's, you know, Tim's our creative content guy, bringing him in to be part of the marketing team. I'm still going to be in charge of all that. He'll be more like directing some of the videos and helping out with some of that kind of stuff, but it's still going to be the same formula. He likes what we do, and we're happy to have him, but I'm not going to change our format. It's really the length and how quickly we get into the video. Those things will change over time.
So have you ever seen any shifts in the outdoor community that have impacted your business in either a positive or a negative way?
100%. So not really, I won't say positive or negative in any way that's like harmful on purpose and like that. So what's happening, we came up at a time during COVID where everybody's getting outside. There was a massive influx of people hiking outside. We're talking like 4X, like maybe even more than that. It's hard to, you know, this industry, you know, people have talked about it. It's at least 4 times the number of people are getting outside. So we had a massive number of people to market to. A lot of small companies started during that time, blew up during that time. A lot of old companies really expanded during that time. But everybody, you know, at some point that was going to trail off. And if you didn't pay attention to that, you were going to be hurting. And really last year, even the year before that, some businesses started to kind of drop off because that the number of hikers was starting to recede back a little bit. You didn't have the massive number from 2020, 21, 22. 2023 started pulling back a little bit. 2024 pulled back a lot. This year pulled back even more. And right now, the way experts are talking, it's like pretty much where it was pre-pandemic levels of number of people that are hiking out there. So I knew from very early on this, it's honestly been on our plan. We've talked about it all the time. At some point, this streak ends. I want to be there and ready for it. And so we really positioned ourselves to just keep doing things differently. So we stand out. So we're there. We want to be last man standing. A lot of companies didn't make it last year. Waymark Gear is one of them. A bunch of other companies, I can't think off the top of my head, went out of business last year because they just did not scale back fast enough. They didn't reset. Yeah. They didn't get back under control, or they accumulated so much debt, so many people, so much equipment, and they just were not able to scale back and end up just going out of business. So this year, it kind of caught up to us, but not in a way that we expected. You know, our direct to customer, we've controlled that growth. We have still doing really well with that. The one thing we didn't think about was all the business to business accounts that we were accumulating over the last 5 years. You know, the Garage Growing Gear was the first one, but the last 3 years we started adding more. And last year we had at least 12 different business accounts that we sell to. And last year was 12. This year, there's only 3 of those actually actively purchasing. So there was been a massive withdrawal in businesses. Either they closed or they're scaling back their purchasing. Whatever's going on, the whole industry is pulling back. I can't control those businesses. I can only control mine. So our direct to customer sales are still doing good, still strong, because we're finding new ways to market. TikTok, Facebook ads, whatever we're doing, it's still working. But I can't control these other businesses that are failing and pulling back. So, you know, we're losing 20% of our business in 6 months. And that was wild to watch. And we couldn't do anything about it. And that's what led to that video that I made last week, where I was like, hey guys, do you have any ideas? I don't want to lay anybody off. Here's what's going on. Like, direct to customer sales are great. We've controlled that, but I can't control the business to business and wholesale side. I can't make new businesses just appear. I'm not good at that side of the business. My brother runs that side anyway. And so negative in that really seriously impacted our business this year, losing 20% of your sales over the course of 6 months, or I mean, maybe a little bit longer than that, was definitely a negative moment in our history. But I think we'll figure it out. And with the new contacts and, you know, businesses reaching out to us, it's been pretty crazy. So making the video was nervous and terrifying. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I made this video where I basically was like, hey, I need help. Here's our situation. I don't want to lie about it. I need some ideas. And a lot of our customers, man, God bless them. They're messaging me product ideas, company ideas, businesses that they passed on the trail. I mean, just all kinds of big companies reached out. And I so wish I could say their name and thank them. Small companies reached out. And it was crazy. So the receding number of backpackers in the wilderness every year has been going down since COVID. That has negatively impacted us in ways that I didn't quite think about, but we're going to figure it out. Long answer to a short question.
No, and I think, not to sound weird, but in our community, there's a love and there's a support. And it's like what we talked about, I think, even during this podcast and even before. We're united, right? And you could be all walks of life, completely politically different and all that, but this one thing brings us together, and there's a caring and a love that we have to support each other. And I think it's
we're all going through the same thing, especially like on a hiking trip. If you have a group of guys, you're all hiking that same trail, you're all on that same journey together, and there's a bonding experience there. So even if maybe you didn't hike with the guy that you watched make the YouTube video, or you didn't actually hike with the guy that sent me the email, we both took similar journeys out there. We both get it. We're both doing it, you know. And there's just something to that. There's just not another sport or activity or hobby like that. It just not. And I do a lot of weird, crazy stuff, and there's not another industry like the backpacking community. And I've absolutely fell in love with it. And that's why I've vowed, like, anything I do moving forward business-wise will branch off of backpacking in some way. But I absolutely love it. And the outpouring of support was just crazy. We almost didn't post that video. Everybody, like, our shop was split 50-50. We're like, should we post a video? And we're like, I don't, it looks desperate. I was like, I am kind of desperate. I was like, I don't care. Like, I'm not like that proud of a person. I'm not that worried about it. My brother was like, don't post anything negative. I was like, I don't know if it's negative. I said, I'm looking for opportunities. I said, this is real, man. I was like, do I lay someone off, swallow my pride? Or do I swallow my pride and make a video? It took about 4 or 5 hours. Finally posted it. Best thing we ever did. We're not out of the woods yet, but.
Man, as a consumer, again, that you're vulnerable, you're real. That draws people in. And the honesty, I mean, how many companies do you ever feel that you can trust them?
You're right. And I don't know how we kind of fell into that. I know it was very intentional early on to be that type of company, but again, I don't think we realize how big we would get. And you would think that at some point that would be hard to do. And I don't find it any harder to do now than I did 5 years ago. And everyone kept saying, oh, at some point you got to switch over. You got to do professional photos. You got to have a professional actor, professional hiker, and you got to do film, a professional film. And I was like, but why? Like, what am I trying to, I get it for certain platforms. Maybe you're going to sell only on Amazon or sell in Walmart or REI. I get it that there's a different level of product photography you got to do. I get that, but that's not my goal. It's really not. I would love the millions of dollars you would get from a REI contract, but that doesn't have, it's not even anywhere near what I want the company to be and why I started it. I like money. I'm not afraid of money, but it's just not my focus. I want to build something that means something to people, including my employees. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. And you know, I'm glad that you made that decision. Cause then if you went the other way, then you would only want to be on a real professional podcast.
I am so unprofessional. I don't even pay attention to the name of the podcast I'm on. That's how unprofessional I am. I still feel so stupid about this. Like, Texas, Texas, Texas. I was like, ah, crap. I cannot believe I
forgot. Hey, it happens to us all. What are you talking about? All right. So this is kind of a late question, but you know, we're already halfway through 2025. I personally would like to know what were your goals, or what are some of your goals for Hilltop Packs in 2025? Top two, top three, top one.
Yeah. So our top goal, like, I never really make product goals because that just kind of comes in waves. So I don't really make goals in that way. My goal right now is to build the wholesale and business to business side up a little bit more to where we could bring back some of the part-time people that we let go, as well as create a new position for Tim. So Tim, again, he's moving here soon. He's on a backpacking trip right now with backpacking with Jason. And I don't know if he's in Kentucky or where he's at. I forget where he's at. Doesn't matter. So we have to create a new position for him where we can financially afford to have him here. And I'm going to bring back some more. I want to basically get the full team back together, which is about 12 people. And that's my goal. It's just to get back to a level where everybody's working again. And I mean, yes, the core people are working, but that's my goal, is to reach that financial level. And if we go further than that, that's fine. But that's my goal, is just to get the people back in there that deserve to be there, that want to be there. They want to work. I got to find the work for them. So that's kind of my goal for this year, is just restructure, rethink how we do the wholesale and business to business side of things, and maybe even branch out into like more groups, like group buys, like say you have a hiking group of, I don't know, 10 people, 100 people, whatever it is, reach out to those people and give them like custom discounts for their group, or even just like a certain bag with their logo on it. I want to kind of branch off into those kind of things. And I still want to focus on, you know, our community, not big stores. I want smaller trail town stores. I want smaller hiking groups. That's the kind of stuff, the community driven stuff. That's what I want.
So what is a piece of gear from another company? You don't have to mention the company's name, that you love and you always bring along with you on a backpacking trip.
Sure. We'll just go back. First of all, I bought a lot of Z-Pack stuff. And so I love that, but I did move on to make my own gear. I also bought some early quilts from Enlightened Equipment. Great company. Both those companies are phenomenal. I can't say enough nice things about those guys. More recently, I've become friends with Chad from UGQ. I'm using his quilts. So I'm pretty much always using his stuff over there. If I had to like branch out and use some other gear company's stuff that maybe I even though I make it, and if I didn't have a company, I would use like my buddy Devin makes stuff. What's its company's even called? And it was Devin. It doesn't matter. His company, I forget what it's even called. I'm getting so old. Red Paw Packs is another one. A guy named Matt. Just really cool people. Small makers making gear out of their garage, out of their home. They just hustle. Good people have offered good advice to me when they didn't need to. You know, when they're smaller, same size, bigger. In fact, Matt from Red Paw Packs was some of the videos I watched before I made Hilltop Packs at a company. He was making sewing videos and I just watched them. And then I made my own stuff and took off. So just a lot of cool guys and gear that I would carry if I wasn't making it myself. But hopefully that answers the question.
Oh, absolutely. I loved it. All right. So as we start to wrap up, the next two questions are tradition. Every episode ends with them, but I've added one other question to their tradition. So here we go. And this is mainly related more to hiking and backpacking. But what is one piece of gear that you would recommend to a new hiker or a backpacker?
Get a food bag. And it's such a weird thing to talk about, but I get a lot of pushback in a lot of our ads and like videos we make. It's usually hikers who don't really quite understand what a food bag is, I guess. They don't understand why you would want to use a food bag that has like a custom print on it. And to me, it's a little morale booster. You know, get a food bag that has a photo of something that's important to you. Could be a trail, could be a dog, could be your children. I love having my family on my food bag. It's so simple, but it's a little piece of morale you can carry around with you. Yes, it's not cheap. It's definitely a pricey piece of equipment just for a bag. You can buy them at Walmart for $5. But I see the value in our customers and the way they talk about it. And that's why I feel comfortable recommending. If you're going to buy something, do that. Get a custom printed bag with some kind of photo that means something to you, and then use that as motivation while you're out on the trail.
Oh, I love that. Same question, but it's with what is one piece of safety advice that you would recommend to a new hiker or backpacker?
Safety advice. I'll definitely carry a satellite communicator, 100%. I didn't use one early on. I don't think I did. I think my first trip, I didn't use one. And then I quickly got one shortly after that. And I went before Garmin bought their InReach. There was a company called InReach. I had that one. And then Garmin bought it and I bought their version of it. And I highly recommend getting a satellite communicator just for your family's peace of mind and your own peace of mind. You just never know what's going to happen out there at our age, of course.
Absolutely. We're one step away from a heart attack, I think.
Yeah. Yep. Be a good way to go out there on the trail somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's my dream.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it's funny you say satellite communicator, because I got one as well. And it was when I got home from a backpacking trip. So the four highest peaks in Texas, we call it the Quad Quad. So you hike up on a trail to Guadalupe Peak, and then it's off trail canyon navigation to Schumard, Bartlett, to Bush, and then it's down a trail on Bush all the way back to the campsite. And so I had a quest to do the 10 highest peaks in Texas. And so there, you know, we were going to bag four of them in a single push. So we started about 3 in the morning, got back to the campsite, I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. course, my wife was trying to reach me, and you don't have cell service out there. And, you know, she's talking to my mom. They're thinking about calling the Rangers. And finally, we get back and I walk out to where the visitor center is and I get some cell service. Oh, man, she let me have it. Mm-hmm. And when I got home, I had a Garmin inReach.
Yeah, I have a whole section in the book that I wrote about why you should have a communicator. Very important. I mean, it's available. Why not use it?
Absolutely. All right, last question. If you could leave one message pinned on a trailhead or a trail marker for hikers decades from now to read, what would it say?
Keep walking. Keep it simple. Just keep walking.
Love it.
Keep walking forward. Put an extra word to it. Keep walking forward. Don't look back.
Yep. I love it. Well, Ben, first off, I can't thank you enough because, you know, as we talk through the podcast, you're a man of many hats, many responsibilities, and for you to take 2.5 hours almost of your day to spend on this podcast, it means a lot to me.
Happy to
do it. I don't know that I could ever, in words, thank you enough or tell you how much this means to me, but I greatly appreciate it. And for sure, you will always have support from the Trailblazing Texas podcast and my listeners.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, I thank you.
Thank you, man. Seriously, like we've talked earlier, I don't do like big podcasts or anything. I love smaller podcasts, and I don't care if it's one listener or 10 listeners or 1,000 listeners. Like, you get a chance to talk to somebody about my company, I'm going to do it. So, I'm super appreciative that you had me on. So, thank you.
So just to kind of give you a little update, because I thought it was kind of exciting, over the last 100 days, this isn't like a Joe Rogan podcast, but we were in 26 countries and 236 locations.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't lose any subscribers for you.
They're not going to be able to click fast enough the follow button. So that's the goal.
Hopefully.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful rest of your night, and thanks again. And for sure, we will be in touch.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.